time for apple picking or attending local fairs. Tonight, we discuss agriculture.
You're listening to Blunt Youth Radio, a youth-run public affairs call-in talk show. That's right, it's a call-in show, so if at any point during you have a question or comment, please call in. The number is 780-4909. Again, 780-4909.
And be sure to check out our website, bluntradio.org. Tonight we have a bountiful crop of topics to discuss. From the appeal of the Supreme Court case against Monsanto Agriculture Corporation with farmer Jim Gerritsen, to youth gardening with Laura Maylander, and later in the show we'll be discussing the Common Ground Fair with Jim Unhern. I'm Iris San Giovanni.
And I'm Sierra Stocker.
All right, and while we wait to talk to Jim Gerritsen, talking about agriculture, I live in South Portland, a pretty urban place. So for me, I mean, agriculture is, you know, maybe going to the local farmers market, going to fairs, going apple picking. But Laura Maylander, we have in studio with us. She works at Cultivating Community, where she teaches gardening classes at public elementary schools in Portland, and she also helps manage the 4 community gardens in Portland. So Laura, with your students, what type of, you know, how do they define agriculture? You know, like what, you know, how do they get involved with that?
Well, the two elementary schools I worked with last year, East End Elementary in Riverton, I got to take 1st through 5th graders out into the garden during the school day, which they thought was pretty awesome. They like being outside. They kind of see it as another recess. But I see it as time to connect them to where their food comes from and also see the importance of how the soil really feeds them and not only nourishes their body, but it can be an educational experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to be moving on, because Jim Gerritsen is on the line, to talk about where our food comes from, an important issue at stake right now. A group of Maine farmers, including the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, has challenged the Monsanto's patents on genetically modified seeds and is now appealing their case to the U.S. Supreme Court after a lower court ruled against them in June. And that was... We gathered that from a September 6th article from the Portland Press Herald. And now to speak more on the issue, we have Jim Gerritsen.
Jim Gerritsen, along with his wife Megan, has owned and operated Wood Prairie, a MOFGA certified organic farm in northern Maine for over 35 years. The Gerritsens are focused on the production of organic early generation Maine certified seed potatoes, seed crops, vegetables, and grain. Their seed potatoes are sold retail through their mail order catalog and web business. Additionally, they sell wholesale to several national mail order seed houses. In addition to being president of Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, Jim has served as president of Organic Seed Alliance in
Washington and was on the certification committee of MOFGA, Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, for over 20 years. So hello, Jim.
Hi there, Iris. How are you?
Good. We're talking about seeds here. You know, how do these Monsanto seeds impact, you know, the average person and, you know, like the food that's on our tables?
Well, there's a lot of concern out there that genetic engineering is a technology that has not been adequately tested. The fact is that the regulators that approve the biotech crops from companies like Monsanto are part of a revolving door in which the regulators in the federal government come from a background of industry. They come into the government, they make friends that are, they make decisions that are favorable to their friends in industry. Then after some years in government, they go back to industry. The need for regulators is to represent the public interest, but because of the revolving door, there's a dysfunction. So the crops that have been approved, many people feel have been insufficiently tested prior to approval. So that's one factor, is that when these genetically engineered crops, either by design or when they contaminate non-genetically engineered crops, for example, organic crops, there are concerns about what is the impact on the food. And in the study that I've done on genetically engineered crops, I have no confidence that the approvals have been made based on science. I think they have been based on political consideration.
All right. And in studio, we have with us Laura Maylander, and you're a local educator, and you work with gardens. Has this impacted you at all? I mean, with the seeds that you use?
We usually try to use local seeds, and actually one of our lessons that we teach students is how important it is to save their own seeds. And so we, this year at Easton, actually got a huge donation from Johnny's Seed Company, which is a local company right here in Maine, and they provided most of the seeds for our garden. But this fall, students will learn how to save seeds from tomatoes and the process that goes into that, and also various other crops that we had success with in the garden this year. So we definitely teach kids about the importance of, how people have been saving their seeds for generations, and how the heirloom and older seeds that are really adapted to our climate here in Maine are important to the health of our gardens.
And Jim Gerritsen, first of all, how can Monsanto, patent seeds? And, it's something, seeds are something that are based from nature.
Well, the patent office has been granting patents on life forms, but here's how it works. A patent is only valid until it has been proven to be valid. And in the course of a normal year, about 500,000 patent applications are filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And of those applications, about 200,000 patents are approved. In the course of a year, 3,000 to 5,000 patent challenges, which is exactly what our lawsuit against Monsanto was about, 3,000 to 5,000 patent challenges are brought to court. What is astounding is that once these patents have been challenged, 50% of the patents are found to be invalid. So if you take that on an annual basis, of the 200,000 patents that are approved, half of them, or 100,000 patents, are found invalid. And we have developed four self-standing, independent arguments based on patent law, which will prove that Monsanto's patents are invalid and were improperly granted by the U.S. Patent Office. What we are trying to do is gain standing so that we can argue the merits of our case. And to date, for the last 2.5 years, Monsanto has been stalling and trying to prevent the farmers from gaining access to the courts where they can bring their case forward.
And I was on the Monsanto website and, trying to, hear from their side of the story. I mean, I did run into some difficulties, but one of the things they said as far as their, genetically modified seeds is that, labor-intensive process, there's, a lot of regulation, they make sure, they do everything in their power to, promote food safety. But, as you were saying, that there is, there are downsides to using genetically modified seeds. However, I wanted to, So why file for these lawsuits?
Well, there's two goals that we're trying to achieve by the filing of our lawsuit called Euskada et al. V. Monsanto. It was originally filed in Manhattan in March of 2011, and there are two goals. One is we are challenging the validity of Monsanto's transgenic, or also known as genetically engineered seed patents. And two, we are seeking court protection under the Declaratory Judgment Act so that should farmers in our plaintiff group, through no fault of their own, become contaminated by Monsanto's patented seed technology, that Monsanto would not be permitted to sue us for patent infringement. under U.S. patent law, the only way that someone can legally possess another's patented technology is to have signed a licensing agreement. And one thing that all of the plaintiffs within our lawsuit, and it's a very large plaintiff group, one thing we have in common is that none of us are customers of Monsanto. We don't want their seed. We don't want their technology. We want nothing to do with Monsanto. So, of course, we have not signed a licensing agreement. That means that if we should be in possession of their technology, even if we don't want that possession, even if we don't know about it, even if we don't intend to possess because they have contaminated us, we are at legal jeopardy for being sued for patent infringement. It's not fair, it's not right, and we've gone to court under the Declaratory Judgment Act to gain protection so that Monsanto cannot abuse the farmers.
And again, we're speaking with Jim Gerritsen. So, Jim, you know, how does this contamination happen? Is it, like, through, you know, cross-pollination, you know?
Yes, that's probably the most common way. If you think of the biology lessons that you get in high school, each crop that a farmer grows has its own distinctive biology, and there is a dispersal of pollen. I'll give you an example. One of the seed crops that we grow is seed corn, and the pollen dispersal of seed corn is very large. It means that you have to have large isolation distances to protect your seed crop from being cross-pollinated accidentally by other seed. But when it comes to transgenic or genetically engineered pollen, that contamination will render our organic seed worthless. It will destroy the value of that because within the organic seed industry, the expectation of the market is that organic seed is entirely free of transgenic content by contamination. So should we get contaminated, that seed lot has been destroyed. And in many cases, the seeds that we're working with are strains that we have developed over decades. So we do run the risk because Monsanto has been unwilling to restrain their pollution on their side of the fence. We do run the risk of getting contamination, not only losing our livelihood from contamination of that seed stock, but also then being sued for patent infringement because we, again, Monsanto would consider us to be in possession of their patented technology.
So, I mean, those seem like, you know, like those are both, you know, factors that are, you know, huge impact on, you know, small organic farmers. So if I'm correct, so the lawsuit was filed in March and then denied by a lower court. And so what's being done now? Like, what's the progress?
Well, the lawsuit was originally filed in March of 2011, about 2.5 years ago. And the federal district court judge, Judge Naomi Buchwald in New York City, ruled in favor of Monsanto on their motion to dismiss, saying that there was not sufficient controversy and that the farmers did not have legal standing to sue Monsanto. We felt that decision was in error, so we appealed it to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Washington, D.C., and that ruling was handed down in June of this year, June of 2013. In that ruling, the Court of Appeals reversed the judge's decision, and they agreed with the farmers, saying that we do have standing, we do have a legitimate concern to where we do have the right to go after Monsanto. However, it was a complicated ruling, and what they tried to do was give farmers protection, but the mistake they made is the protection that they have offered to the farmers is not sufficient to truly protect us, and that's why we have now are appealing the Court of Appeals ruling, and we're appealing that to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Great. And where can, you know, our listeners go for, you know, to find out more information?
Well, there's two good websites. The organization that I'm president of, Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, Their website is called osgata.org. That's osgata.org. And there's a lot of information there. And then on our individual farm website, we've devoted a portion of that website to a great deal of information. All of the filed briefs, all of the press releases, all of the court actions, and that's on woodprairie.com. That's woodprairie.com.
And we can put these links on our website, bluntradio.org. Jim Gerritsen, you know, thank you for taking time to speak with us. And, you know, we look forward to following this.
Good. Thank you, Iris. I'm available anytime you want to speak with me.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. Good night.
Again, you're listening to Blunt Youth Radio. We were just speaking with President of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, Jim Gerritsen. I'm Iris Sangiovanni, and with me...
And I'm Sierra Stocker.
All right. And in studio, again, we have Laura Maylander. And so, I mean, you know, as an educator, how is listening to sort of this lawsuit with Monsanto, you know, how does that sort of impact what you're teaching the kids, if at all?
I don't usually talk about genetically modified seeds with elementary students, but this summer, Cultivating Community runs a youth program to maintain our school and community gardens throughout the summer when school's not in session. And actually, high school students teach each other about a lot of food justice issues. And so they do talk about these issues and debate with each other and try to inform each other. And so it's more of a high school issue, I think, than an elementary school.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking to Laura Maylander. She works at Cultivating Communities, which she just spoke about, where she teaches gardening classes at a public elementary school in Portland, and she also helps manage 4 community gardens in Portland.
You were talking about elementary school and teaching your kids earlier. What kind of skills does working with agriculture give young children?
I think it helps students that are learning science and math and reading that is very in a classroom and sometimes maybe a little bit isolated from what they might consider real-world experiences. It allows them to learn those subjects outside in nature, which is what is exciting to me, and I hope to my students. But it gives some concrete examples of how they can take the information they're learning and apply it. And so that's why I really love teaching what I do. Gardening is a way for them to get out and see how what they plant in the fall can turn into a bountiful harvest. And then actually students get to take the harvest and then cook throughout the winter with the food that we've grown during the summer season. So it's a great example of them seeing the start, the seed, and all the way through eating and enjoying the fruits of their labor.
And then, you know, talking about Cultivating Communities, which is geared, you know, for high school students, you know, what kind of, the same skills or, you know?
Yeah, this summer we had Youth Growers was the program that we were running, and students got to work at our farm out in Cape Elizabeth. It's called Turkey Hill Farm, and they raised everything from potatoes, harvested raspberries, learned a lot about different types of crops that grow here in Maine. And like I said before, also got to learn more about food justice issues and how food is accessible or sometimes not as accessible to our Portland community. And there are also programs for high school students that are run throughout the season. So the youth now, the high school students, can be involved in Culinary Crew, which is the program that is starting actually this week. And it draws students from all of the high schools here in Portland to be involved with food justice issues.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get people to come more interested in agriculture? Because I'm a high school student myself, and I know for a lot of people that's like something they don't know a lot about.
Especially, you know, Portland being an urban setting, I mean, how do you get youth involved or interested?
A lot of times it's through word of mouth. Students have friends that might have been involved with cultivating community programs and spread the word that way. Or there's, we talk to teachers, and sometimes we actually go to the various schools and tell them about the opportunities to be involved in our urban gardens. And I think a lot of high school students right now are concerned about the food that they're eating, and they, especially what's served in the cafeteria, and they want to know more about where their food comes from and it, whether or not it's healthy for them. And so they seek us out a lot of times and want to educate their peers about food issues.
And with the youth growers, you know, do you see this program where, you know, teens are involved with agriculture, does it, you know, influence them as far as careers?
I really think so. One of our interns this year, he has been involved with youth growers and then led the program this past summer. He's actually going to Sterling College in Vermont, which
Jules Bernard. Yes. He's a Blunt member as well. He's yeah. So involved.
Yeah, so Jules just left for college, but he's been a great member of the cultivating community team. And you know, he's going now to an agricultural school where he will continue to learn about these issues and perhaps have a career that deals with food justice in the future.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I mean, I feel like sort of the common thought about, you know, what, like, a job in agriculture? Like, I mean, it seems like it's interesting how looked down upon, you know, like a career like that is, but I mean, what's interesting is there's, you know, the food, you know, the need for food is only going to increase. So, I mean, actually, I mean, jobs like this, you know, are necessary. But do you, with the teens that you work with, do they have sort of the similar thought or, I mean?
I've actually been surprised by how many youth are really interested in food issues and agriculture and learning about growing their own food, especially in an urban setting. And I think that interest is only increasing. I might be biased because I'm around a lot of people that care a great deal about their food. But just like what this topic is about, I think a lot of people recently have, especially here in the state of Maine, have been concerned about where our seeds are coming from. And also just have an interest in really helping to sustain our state by buying and growing food right here. And this upcoming Common Ground Fair is a great time to get energized about our food. I love going up there and seeing how many people come from all different parts of our state to celebrate local food.
Yeah, and speaking of the Common Ground Fair, you know, stay tuned with us after break because we'll be talking with Jim Ahern, who's the director of the Common Ground Fair. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. Again, this is Blunt Youth Radio. I'm Iris San Giovanni.
And I'm Sierra Stalker.
And don't forget to call in. The number is 780-4909. Again, 780-4909. I mean, are you interested in agriculture? You know, what, you know, tell us about it.
How aware are people becoming of where their food is coming from? Because I just went to a farmer's market for my first time, the farmer's market in Portland, and I volunteered. I helped with the credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to me how many different places there are that are selling their locally grown foods. I had no idea. So how aware do you think people are now?
I think people are starting to become much more aware. But just like you said, it's through seeing. And I think farmers markets are becoming more visible in Portland. And I like that the Wednesday market is in the heart of the city at Monument Square. That's fun to draw people that are just probably passing by and notice and then come. And I think a lot of education happens by just talking to farmers and asking them about where their farm is and what struggles they have or why they got into agriculture. And I'm really encouraged by the number of young farmers there are in our state. I think we're really fortunate to have so many young people that want to get into this career.
And why is agriculture important to you?
I really love food. I love eating food. I love growing food. It just makes me really excited. I actually grew up on a farm, and then for a while taught in Chicago and in inner city Chicago. I didn't have much access to land and to really connect with the soil and with my food. And I saw how that affected me and also the students that I was teaching. I saw a big disconnect in their education, and that's how I got into gardening education. I think it's a really important thing for students to know about.
Great. And we're going to be going into break very shortly, but I just want to remind, if you're tuning in, this is Blunt Youth Radio, a youth-run public affairs call-in talk show. We are discussing agriculture. And in studio with us, we have Laura Maylander, and she works with cultivating communities. She teaches public elementary gardening classes in Portland, and she also manages four community gardens in Portland. I'm Iris Sangiovanni.
And I'm Sierra Stalker.
And I'll start talking about it now, but perhaps we won't have time to finish. But a couple months back, I watched a TED Talk entitled, The Subversive Plot. And what I found interesting was this, speaker was talking about how, people having their own sort of backyard garden, how it sort of changes up it empowers them more because now they have control over what they're eating, which means they have control over, how much money they're spending. They now have, control over, sort of their health. And I just thought it was sort of an interesting idea. And I mean, what are your thoughts to that?
Yeah, I love the saying that growing your own food is one of the most radical things that you can do, and I really agree with that. It really, you take back ownership of what you're putting into your body, which is one of the most important decisions I think we make every day. And it doesn't have to be for just people that can afford really expensive food. We all, I think, should have access to the land around us and be able to decide what we want to grow and therefore what we want to eat.
Great. And so, again, speaking with Laura Maylander, we are going to be heading into break, but stay tuned. Thank you.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down. Pulling weeds and picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones. Feel the need to grow my own, 'cause the time is close at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain to the music of the land.
Inch by inch, row by row,
Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. Old Bro watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. In my garden I'm as free as that feathered thief of
inch by inch, row by row.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Till the rain comes tumbling down.
Tonight, increasing clouds with a low around 56, southwest wind around 50 miles per hour. Tuesday night, a 30% chance of showers after 11, mostly cloudy with a high near 76, breezy with a southwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Tuesday night, 50% chance of showers, cloudy with a low around 63. South wind 10 to 50 miles per hour. New precipitation amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch possible. Wednesday, a chance of showers before 9 a.m., partly sunny with a high near 77. Winds at 5 times.
You're listening to WMPG and W281 AC, Gorham, Portland. Southern Maine Community Radio from the University of Southern Maine. And right now, you're listening to Blunt.
And if you didn't know, Blunt is a youth-run public affairs call-in talk show. Yep, call-in. So the number is 780-4909, 780-4909. So call us. Tonight we're talking about agriculture. I'm Iris Sangiovanni.
And I'm Sierra Stocker. Sitting here with us right now is Laura Maylander. She works at Cultivating Community, where she teaches gardening class at public elementary schools in Portland. She also helps manage the 4 community gardens in Portland.
Yes, and we're going to be talking about the Common Ground Fair. For those of you, listening, it takes place this September, Friday the 20th through Sunday the 22nd in Unity, Maine. So it's a little, out there, 3 hours drive, but, the fair, prides itself on bringing together people from many different walks of life to celebrate Maine's rural and agricultural traditions. And we're going to be talking with the director of the Common Ground Fair, Jim Ahern. But until then, I haven't been to the Common Ground Fair in years. The last time I came home with a bunny rabbit, so...
I've never been to the Common Ground Fair, so...
Laura Maylander, you mentioned it in the first half. What are your experiences with the Common Ground Fair?
I just moved to Maine last year, and actually right around this time, and so one of my first weekends living here in Portland, I went up to Unity for the Common Ground Fair, and I was blown away. It's so exciting. It's really neat to see the enthusiasm in this state for agriculture, especially organic agriculture.
Mm-hmm. And, so we're going to be talking about what some events are, and why is it so important to sort of celebrate and share these, Maine's agricultural traditions, because as a state we do potato farmers, we're blueberries, it's our heritage, and for me as well, I don't consider myself that knowledgeable about agriculture. I know that you need you need a seed, you need water, sunlight, the basics, but as far as techniques with greenhouses and stuff like that,
I live out in the country and I still don't know very much. I have friends that are farm owners. They come up to Portland for the farmers market, and I really don't know anything either. So
yeah, and probably the most exposure that I get is going to the farmers markets, which I think is probably the case with many people, but even so, it is really good to sort of there's such a connection with nature and people, so to sort of get a reminder of that is good. There's a saying, I'm blanking on the person, but just talking about food is medicine is food, and Laura, Maylander, how do you feel about that saying?
Yeah, that's a very important part of the education that I try to teach elementary students. In the winter, we spend a lot of time talking about nutrition and how food is our medicine and what nutrients, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants are in our food that occur naturally, and how if we're putting healthy things into our body and really taking care of ourselves, we don't need other types of medicine.
Mm-hmm. And, we talked about Jules Fernard, who's an intern with Cultivating Communities. I had the opportunity this summer to speak with him and a couple other interns, and it was a piece I was doing on hunger, but they had really interesting things to say as far as considering hunger to be those who, don't have healthy foods available to them. So people that are going to McDonald's are still hungry, and I was like, I thought that was a really interesting perspective. But along with that, it was really interesting to see, like, Jules gave me a tour of the garden, and he was like, this is kale, and, we use it in, soups. It's a really hearty vegetable. It was cool to see someone, like a peer of mine, being able to, explain, how it grows and, what the benefits of eating it are and how you can cook it. So, with your kindergartners, are they, how much of it, the process of growing foods and, how healthy they are, how much do they comprehend and are able to sort of share with others?
The youngest I work with is first grade, but I think they absorb quite a bit, especially getting to actually go out into the garden, experience planting seeds and then weeding, watering, and then finally harvesting. It's a very concrete way to learn, and I think that's most appropriate for young students. And in some ways, I think they almost get it more because it excites them so much that they can see that entire process, and it's empowers them also too to see that by their actions throughout a school year they can raise their own food and then also, like you said, learn how to cook with it.
And how much of it's awesome that this opportunity is given in school, but like how much of it carries over into home? Are home gardens encouraged? And
yeah, that's a good point, because if students learn about it in school, we're hoping that impacts the decisions they make when they leave school. And so especially with, like I was saying before, first graders, they often, I think, go home and spread the word the most to their families. And I actually had a student this past year who was so excited about gardening that she asked her family to get a community plot at the North Street Garden here in Portland. And throughout the summer, she and her mom grew their own food, which was really satisfying for me to see that she was so excited about what she learned in school that she wanted to do it on her own and educate her family about healthy eating.
Yeah, and speaking of these community gardens, how accessible are they?
Well, there are only 4 community gardens that are run by the city of Portland, and so there is quite a long waiting list for plots. But there are a few other gardens. The Cultivating Community runs one on Boyd Street that actually is the garden that Jules gave you a tour of.
Yes, yes.
And so that's right by our office. And then Riverton Community has a garden that I know right now has empty plots. And so if people are looking to get involved, and there's still a lot of things that you can plant, even though it's late in the season. Kale, like you mentioned, loves cold weather. So, you can contact the Riverton Community Garden if you would like to start gardening this year and throw some garlic in the ground and mm-hmm. then start again in the spring.
Excuse me. And how much is there a cost to?
It's $35 for plots in the city, but based on income, there is a sliding scale.
Just speaking on gardening in general, a few older women came into my school last year and talked about bettering our planet, and one of their suggestions was to have a school garden. I'm not sure what happened with the whole plan of School Garden along the way, because it didn't end up happening, but do you think it's a good idea to start a school garden?
I do. I think it's a really incredible idea. Just like I said, it's a concrete way for students to learn about science or math and go out and really, you know, if they're learning perimeter, to see a concrete example right there in the garden, or if they're learning about insects and pollination, to go out and actually be able to witness and observe what's happening right outside their classroom. And Portland is a lucky city because we have so many school and community gardens already established. And like I said before, I work at East End Community School and teach gardening to the second and fourth graders there. And there's a beautiful school garden that's been going for several years now. And I think, like you said, it's difficult sometimes to get a school garden established, even if there's excitement, because there's so much maintenance and there's a lot of planning that I would advise anyone interested in starting a school garden to consider before they launch in. But it's very beneficial, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of curious, as far as the gardens that you have, like, I mean, do you compost as well? Like, I mean, what ways are you sort of making it more a sustainable garden?
Yeah, and actually, Portland's elementary schools, and I think high schools too, are really trying to look at the issue of food waste in the cafeterias, and that's a great connection to the garden, because there is a lot of food that goes in to landfills when it is such a resource that we can turn back into really healthy soil and amend our gardens and help feed it for the next season. And so one of the lessons that we do in the fall and then continue throughout the winter and spring is to teach students about composting. And we start in the fall by talking about how we use our even weeds you can turn back into really healthy soil. And then in the winter we learn more about worm composting, how you can do it inside, and students are encouraged to teach their families about how they can have worms in their kitchen and that they can put their scraps in, and it turns into this great resource for their garden.
Great. And just to remind our listeners, we are talking about agriculture here on Blunt Radio. I'm Iris San Giovanni.
And I'm Sierra Stalker.
Please call. The number is 780-4909. That's
780-4909.
And be sure to also check out our website, bluntradio.org. We'll be putting up some links later tonight, so check it out. And in studio with us, we have
Laura Maylander.
All right. You were talking about, you know, earthworms, you know, having worms in the kitchen, like, perhaps that's one of the things that's, well, I mean, I like worms, but, you know, other insects, you know, spiders, you know, they kind of deter me from going into the garden just a little bit, just a little fear of them, but, I mean, insects are sort of crucial to the whole process of plants growing, especially with bees, you know, cross-pollination and all of that. Is there also a lot of education on insects and,
definitely,
you know, other critters?
Yeah. Yeah, ecosystems is an important topic for many grades in elementary school, and there's so many ecosystems happening right outside in the school gardens. And so we really encourage students to go out and just observe what they see. And just the other day, I was in our strawberry patch in one of the school gardens and saw a snake, and I was really excited. I was hoping that it would hang around for the start of school so the students could see that. But, you know, with the compost worm bins, when you get kids interested in these topics young, they kind of get over their fear. And so I wonder if you hadn't played with worm bins when you were in first grade, if you wouldn't think that they were pretty awesome, like most of my first graders do.
Yeah, worms are cool. Spiders. Too many legs for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, it is, I mean, I think it's good to look at, you know, the bigger picture of the ecosystem and,
go back on what you said earlier about compost bins, we actually did just get a compost bin at my school, and the first time I ever saw a compost bin was, I went to Chewonki. I don't know if you know that camp. Yeah, but
wait, I don't know.
Chewonki is, there's a few different like parts of Chewonki, but I went with my school, so I just went for a week. It's a lot of team building activity. You make your own food. So after you make your food in the morning, you put it all in a plastic bag and you bring it to the compost bin, and they teach you how to do compost. So it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And we're really lucky here in Portland that Garbage to Gardens is a business that just started, and now you can actually have your compost picked up for you if you don't have the capacity to deal with your food waste on your own. If you don't have a worm bin in your kitchen, you can now give that vital resource, those scraps that don't go into the landfill, but they turn it into compost. And at the, I think in the spring, they actually give you back compost that you can use for your garden. So Garbage to Gardens is a great thing that's going on right here in Portland.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, about, you know, sort of the ordinances as far as Portland goes, but, like, you know, having livestock, like, I mean, chickens, I feel like, is the only thing you could probably get away with in the city, but, you know, what kind of education is done on, you know, livestock or, you know?
Out at our farm, the cultivating community has in Cape Elizabeth, we run our youth programming out there in the summer, and there's farm camp, which is another opportunity for elementary students to get to also see how chickens are hatched and then raised. And there were goats this year that farm camp had, and pigs. And so students also get to learn about how animals are a crucial part of our agriculture.
And just to go back on sort of the Common Ground Fair, just having a little bit of difficulty getting Jim Ahern on the line, but he was talking to me about some events that, you know, urban youth might be interested in. Friday, there is a youth enterprise zone, which is basically, you know, teens 11 to 18 years old, you know, showcasing, you know, wax candles, wool, like, you know, things that they make. So it's a really creative area, and you can find out more information at MOFGA.org. But yeah, so Laura, we're here with Laura Maylander. So, you know, working with cultivating communities, there's also, you know, the aspect where you work with immigrants. And so, you know, how, you know, what's the impact in doing that?
Well, there's many facets of what cultivating community does. And actually, I wanted to make a plug. We're going to have a booth set up at the MOFCA Fair. And so at Common Ground, come by the young, I think it's called the Youth Tent, and Cultivating Community will be there. And you can talk to some of our youth on Saturday. They will be there to share info with you. But we run a CSA, actually, a cultivating community, so that's another side of what we do. And new Americans who might have been farming in their home countries often come to Maine and want to continue on with that career. And so cultivating community works with those new Americans to set up a CSA where everyone kind of comes together and sells their produce either through our CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And so you can sign up and you give your money at the beginning of the season when there's a lot of expenses for farmers. And so they can buy their seeds and pay for their water and all of the things that go into the season. And then each week you are delivered a bag of fresh produce. And also Cultivating Community has farm stands throughout the city. And so there's access to healthy food all around the Portland area. And you can also find our New American Farmers at the farmers markets here in Portland.
And how does, you know, working with, you know, these newfound immigrants sort of help, does it help alleviate some of the poverty at all, or, you know, what impact does it have on them?
Yeah, it gives them a great career where hopefully they start to make enough money to support their families, especially when it's so difficult to come to a new country where you might not know the language or there's a lot of cultural barriers, and to have the comfort of going back to a career that you had in the country that you came from, I think it's a great opportunity for these farmers.
Great. And I just don't want to stop you right there, but we do have Jim Ahern on the line. He is the director of the Common Ground Fair, which is produced by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, also known as MOFGA. So in 2008, he came to work with MOFGA, and this will be his sixth year as director of the Common Ground County Fair. So, Jim, thank you for being with us.
I'm glad to make it. Sorry, the phones are, it's always fun up here.
So. not a problem. You know, you're here, so that's all that matters. So I talked a little bit about the Youth Enterprise Zone, but, you know, what other events offered would sort of appeal to urban youth? And you can probably talk more about the Enterprise Zone as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, we were talking earlier before the show that Enterprise Zone is an entrepreneur area for young Mainers. And so all the vendors in there are teenagers, and that is definitely one of my favorite places at the fair. And that's on Fridays every year. But, the fair is very eclectic, very diverse. So if somebody were coming to the fair and they were interested in, say they wanted to learn more about cooking, or if they were really into alternative energy, solar, wind, or how to have a passive solar, super insulated house, we have a lot of different exhibitors at the fair, and almost all of them, or most of them, many of them, give presentations and talks. So there's over 700 events on the schedule that people can go to. And I think that's one of one of the things that's really neat about the Common Ground Fair that differentiates it from other fairs, is that it's not just to come and, see and walk around. You can definitely do that, but if there's something that strikes your fancy, there's somebody there that probably knows a lot about it that you can have a conversation with, and everyone's really accessible. So,
can you speak up just a little bit? Sorry.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Is that better?
Yes, better. Thank you.
Okay, great.
So Jim Ahern, you're talking. There's diversity here at the fair. One thing for me, though, is, Unity, living in Portland, it's kind of far away. How do you make the fair more accessible in terms of location or, the types of tents off and, topics offered?
Yeah, that's a really good question. A lot of, the fair used to be a little further south, and it used to be a lot easier to get to from Portland. But there are different ways. There's a carpool set up through rideshare, set up through Ride Maine, and so you can go online, and if you're looking for a ride, or if you're offering a ride, and if you're in Southern Maine, you can find somebody to share the car ride up with you, and that's a really good way to do it. We've looked into buses, and we'd love to be able to get some buses to come up, but it's always a sort of chicken and an egg situation. You got to make sure you got enough people for the bus. So, we'll see. That's something that we're looking for maybe in the future. And if there were people in Portland that wanted to help organize it, we'd love to get them together to help pull that together.
And again,
and another thing, too, I was just thinking in terms of the cost, it's very reasonable for a day, we also have a lot of volunteer opportunities, and some of them are a blast. A lot of people have a lot of fun, whether it's in the kitchen cooking, oddly enough, the compost and recycling area. You might think, helping to sort garbage can't be that glamorous, but it's a lot. The gang that does it has a ball. They
and
have a lot of fun.
Do you need experience
it.
To be a volunteer?
Do you need experience?
Yeah, do you need to, do you need...
It depends. Let's say somebody wanted to help over in the livestock area. We definitely want people that are familiar with livestock. Most of the volunteer opportunities, it's, what you really need is a good attitude and the willingness to work hard for a few hours, and that's about it. And anyone that volunteers, they get a free meal and a T-shirt, and usually you meet some folks and become friends, you know, with other people you are working with throughout the day. So it's a good experience. So that's for a lot of people that come to the fair regulars. We get a lot of volunteers that love that just for the social aspect, and there are a lot of families that do it. So you don't need to be an adult. There are a lot of opportunities for teenagers and young adults.
And again, I just want to remind our listeners that we're speaking to Jim Ahern, who's the director of the Common Ground Fair. Jim, why is it important for this fair to exist, like to share and celebrate Maine's agricultural traditions?
Well, fairs, the fairs go back a long way. There was a really fun little column in the Press Herald this last weekend by the Humble Farmer. And he talked about ancient medieval fairs and the connection between those and the Common Ground Fair. And really, they are, you know, I think of the Common Ground Fair as a community celebration, kind of a touchstone of a moment to step aside and admire and enjoy and really sort of dive into a lot of what Maine has to offer. And particularly, it's, a lot of us take our food for granted. You know, you can just go into the convenience store or the supermarket and, you know, or the lunch line at school and there's your food. But a lot of work goes into making that. And we're very fortunate here in Maine to live very close to a lot of our food producers and the farmers and the growers that bring us our food. And so having that connection to the food roots, so to speak, of our state, I think is very important because it not only helps us as citizens really understand our communities more, but it helps us understand the importance of health and good eating and the clean environment and how those are all tied in with the economy and jobs and culture. So it's a good mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
Plus, it tastes great. It's delicious. It's a lot of fun.
Yes, and you brought up a sort of an interesting point. I mean, I feel like, for me, like, agriculture, where our food comes, it really does, you know, interconnect with other, like, you know, aspects of our lives, like our health, the economy, you know, and, yeah. So, for more information about the fair, you can go to Mofska. .org, and we'll link that to our website, bluntradio.org, but we are running out of time, I'm afraid. But Jim Ahern, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. He's the director of the Common Ground Fair.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope folks in Portland can make it up. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, and the fair is September 20th through the 22nd, Friday through Sunday.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
And so, again, we are getting very close to the end of the show, but I want to just thank all of our guests that we've had this evening. I want to thank, the local farmer, Jim Gerritsen. I want to thank, Laura Maylander, who's a local educator on gardening with youth. And just speaking with Jim Ahern, who's the director of the Common Ground Fair. I want to thank you, Sierra Stalker, for being my co-host. I want to thank Leo Hilton and Matt Osman, who engineered the show. I think it's been an interesting discussion.
Yes.
Of course, there's so much more to talk about as far as, agriculture, such a broad topic, but, it being fall, I encourage you all to go to your local fairs, go to your local farmer markets, go apple picking, and enjoy the fall and all that it brings. I'm Ara San Giovanni.
And I'm Sierra Stalker.
Thank you. And up next is jazz.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?